about her thoughts about the Women's Studies program. Turn it on, and I'm going to try to remember to watch it so it doesn't stop on us.
So you're going to ask.
So, yes. Well, why don't you start at the beginning of your involvement with the Women's Studies program?
I came to Albany as what was called the first outside director of Women's Studies. Previous directors had gotten either no leave or some part-time leave from their departments to run the program, but I was the first person hired from the outside explicitly to run Women's Studies, with the promise that after 3 years we would hire someone else and I would rotate into my own discipline, which was sociology. Sociology would have been where I would get tenure, but as opposed to current directors and faculty members in Women's Studies, I was off track as director. Part of the rationale, and I think a good one at the time, was that there was so much to do that I might not be able to publish as much as sociology would want, and in some sense that proved both helpful and harmful. Since I had come with 5 years of prior service, it meant that I couldn't even come up for tenure till I had been working for, I can say I kept three more years, for 8 years.
Yeah.
And I did wait a little longer after that, so that it kind of lengthened the amount of time before I got tenure. But it did free me, and that was a big plus. I didn't need to pay as much attention to the demands of sociology as I might have. It also put me in an interesting position coming from the quote-unquote outside. I had come from the University of Washington, being of the generation, like Joan Schultz, who was the previous director, self-taught in women's studies. There were no courses in women's studies. I had taught as a graduate student the second course ever on women at Johns Hopkins University, and at that point we had to draw from four different disciplines just to teach the one course. Now I could teach a tiny topic in one discipline and make a whole course out of it. So that kind of knowledge explosion has been tremendous. But when I went to the University of Washington, they were one of the earlier programs. In fact, I think this year they're celebrating their 25th year. And I got excited about my involvement in women's studies there, although I was hired in sociology, and got to a position where I wanted to have more involvement and was looking for such a job when I came here. So that was how I came, as part of my general search for a job where I could use my self-training in women's studies. I had been involved in the National Women's Studies Association in its founding. I had been a regional rep, and I wanted to make some use of those skills and came here to do that, and I thought this was an ideal job because sociology would know they were getting a women's studies person, whereas at the University of Washington they had not been entirely thrilled with the fact that I wasn't a mainstream stratification person. So for me it was a good opportunity to take things on, and I enjoyed it because for me it was a chance to feel like my politics and my job were the same thing for a change, and not feel very split between community activism or even academic activism that wasn't my job, but to actually have job that combined the two. I felt like I was sort of remaking myself, and it was a nice opportunity for me. At the same time, I was very aware that I was coming into an established community that had very much nurtured this program, and I think for a long time I also felt inspected as to whether or not I was going to come up to the community standards of what feminists should be doing. And although there was a big feminist community, I also felt that I was to make my own way and not necessarily become best friends with people who were best friends already. It was also structurally a difficult position, as we were saying earlier, because I was the only person who was truly responsible to women's studies. It was my full-time job, and I had a half-time secretary, and everybody else had joint or adjunct or affiliate kinds of positions with the program. But nobody, as happened later, got their tenure through women's studies. I wasn't going to, but there was no one else who was ultimately responsible for what happened in women's studies. So it meant for some ways a sense of isolation. We were over in the humanities building at the time, and I'm a social scientist. And I started in the middle of the, who was on the third floor? Well, up on the third floor, and moved down to being in, kind of next to Slavic and English on the second floor. And so the people around me, it's actually kind of an empty floor, people didn't tend to come in. And they weren't in my discipline either, so it sort of felt like me and the secretary. Not in terms of the fellowship of, or sorarship perhaps, of the people involved in women's studies, but in a day-to-day way, I didn't run into women's studies colleagues. And that feeling came about in another way, in that at that point in time, women's studies was run by, what did we call it, program committee? This was the women's studies committee.
Yeah, the committee.
It was the advisory committee,
right.
Women's studies advisory committee. And that was made up of a mixture of people who were interested in the program, including faculty, staff, graduate and undergraduate students, as well as some community people. And there was a sense that I would often have that everybody could talk about what we should do, but ultimately the we was me. And I learned that I really had to choose how much I could do and work on the things that were important. My explicit task was to change the major from what had been a student-initiated major into a faculty-initiated major, and it later became a state-registered major. But prior to my coming, it had been students creating their own major and recreating their own major each time through the interdisciplinary studies option that undergraduate students could do. And so my goal was, we of course encouraged people to take particular courses in creating that major, but to concretize that by making it a faculty-initiated major. And that's what I did. I guess that work didn't get fully completed till the end of my three-year term, but nonetheless I did accomplish that. The other goal was to try and keep and maintain community involvement. So I think I had a lot of lunches in that period. I'm not a lunch person, but I ate a lot of lunches in that period. I tried to get to know everybody who'd been involved in the Women's Studies program, but also anybody new who came to campus who might be involved. In some cases, people who might have been oppositional, just to get to know what the opposition was, to basically feel out Women's Studies' place in the institution and make friends, because I thought that perhaps one of the things that happened was, not through anybody's fault, but a structural thing, is you're fighting for space for a new program. The people who fight after a while get to be seen as the fighters. And it was an advantage to me to come in from the outside and not have had fought or debated with anybody else, but instead to come in and be the person who was nice, but firm, of course. but having had no negative history with anyone. And I think that was facilitated by the fact that at that point in time there was a new dean, John Shoemaker, who was young, relatively young as deans go, progressive and interested in fostering anything that you wanted to do. Basically, if you had an idea and you wanted to build on it, he was interested in your doing it. And it was a kind of attitude that was extremely helpful in terms of building up women's studies. I felt that we were respected as a program, I was treated as an equal to other department chairs, going to chairs meetings. And I also think that facilitated our cross-university contacts. I met not only other people in the Humanities College, but would represent the program then. On the undergraduate advisory committee and so on. And so I got to be a kind of ambassador, as it were, for the program in many realms. And it was good for me because I got to scout out other people who might be interested and build ties and lines, even if only a friendship, with a variety of other colleagues. For me, it was a very nice experience in contrast to the University of Washington, which had been 3 times as large, and it was very hard to ever get out of your building and meet other people. And despite the fact that this campus has maybe 14,000 undergraduate students and 3,000 graduate students, it was considerably smaller and more manageable than the University of Washington had been. So I think that helped me. So I did do that kind of building links. I met and worked with people in the YWCA and the group that ultimately created the Women's Building in downtown Albany, and probably more organizations than I can remember now, both in terms of looking for placements for our internship that got developed not actually under my leadership, but more, I believe, under Iris Burgers, who followed me. But I had already started checking out field placements and meeting with community people in that vein. And I think that was another thing that I was kind of successful at. One of the things I changed, which was better for me, I'm not sure, I think it was better for the program, was that the Women's Studies Committee used to always meet at Joan's house, and Joan is a wonderful hostess, and would host the meetings all the time, making it, in that sense, since it was a volunteer labor on people's parts, giving them sort of something in return. But I didn't see that personally as a good long-term strategy, and that I thought another way for people to be more involved would be to rotate those meetings, both across different houses, but also between on-campus and off-campus, because I think it tended to cut out a lot of staff people when it was off-campus, and in a way that it might not when it was on-campus. It also would have the pro and the con of having it on-campus, of taking out some of the social life aspect of it and making us focus a little bit more on the business. And as we became more of a department, we certainly weren't that yet, but as we moved in that direction, that was going to become increasingly important, not to lose that community feeling, but at the same time to feel like something was accomplished at the meetings. I think that was an important push for me. I accomplished this by moving 20 miles out of town, where nobody would want to go regularly for a meeting. It wasn't exactly my intent. I didn't move solely for that purpose. But I did think that moving out of downtown would help, and I personally was missing the country. I never intended to move 20 miles away. But it did end up having that purpose of forcing us to rotate, and it was something I wanted to happen, and I personally believe that that was good. I certainly think it got more people engaged and feeling responsible for hosting the department and feeling involved in that way. It didn't necessarily change my sense that everybody had ideas, but I was the one who was supposed to fulfill them. But I did feel that it helped make more people feel more involved. And I think although it was a small thing, it was kind of a transitional accomplishment that I felt good about.
I remember something that you did when I joined the Women's Studies Committee. The first meeting that I went to, there was some discussion about a feeling that there was an in-group on the committee, and a concern that people expressed about how difficult it was for new people to get involved because of this. And I don't know who suggested it, whether you suggested it or someone else did, but the suggestion was that rather than have you lead the meeting and coordinate the meetings and set up the agenda, that 2 new people would be selected or asked to volunteer to do it. And Ellen Higgins and I volunteered, and it was a wonderful way for us to get involved. I mean, of course, I remember working very closely with you because we had to set up agendas and so I personally always appreciated that, and was sad to see that it didn't get carried through very long. and I don't know why.
I'd probably have to study my own notes to remember why, but I do, now that you mentioned, remember doing that, and actually I saw it as part of what became your long-term involvement.
Absolutely.
In a way, I'm not sure you would have been as involved had we not done that, both in doing surveys of people and creating the various library booklets and resources, which really grew into major publications for you over time, and working on the Affirmative Action Committee, too, in a way that I think you probably wouldn't have, and in Ellen's case, ending up teaching for women's studies. And I did think that that was very important and something I was trying to have happen more. And I thought it was appropriate for the committee to have its own chair separate of, or chairs, separate from me. And I did think that was a good idea. I certainly think it worked out well.
Me too.
For the two of you.
Because
it made the body more of a body that had, you know, had its own agendas and thoughts, and kind of gave me somebody to negotiate and talk with about those things. And we also tried to set up committees and have, you know, various task forces. And I think that was part of something I felt I was trying to do, part of the sort of networking with other people, whether or not, certainly people said that they thought there was an in-group. I don't think I invented that. I'm pretty sure I heard that.
It may not have been you who said that.
Well, I'm sure I repeated it, but whether, because I know I occasionally felt that. Whether or not it was felt and by how many people, it's hard to say. But I do think that people came to feel that those who started the group, particularly some of the core courses, had a greater investment in it and weren't always as open as they might be to have other people equally involved. Now, some of that I don't think was a political decision as much a personal decision. I can have only so many close friends.
Yeah.
And I can't have any more, but since it was allied with people who were some of the, or not all, but some of the people who were the originators of the program, I think it did make it feel hard for some people to break in. And I know I made some conscious efforts to work with women of color to feel more involved, and some of them said to me that they felt that I had done that more than prior directors, which is not to say that other directors didn't care about those issues, because I know personally they did, but that I made them feel more like I wasn't coming to them just when we needed their support on an issue, but rather to build up a general sense of what can we do together, which maybe you can't do so well when you're starting a program. It might be easier for somebody from the outside who comes in at some level of motion. But I felt it was important to kind of reach out to the library, to women of color, to people involved in the campus internships, to get them somewhat more involved, in part because I didn't think we could all do it by ourselves. But I do think that sometimes that sense of there being an in-group made it, for some people, feel that the issues were gay straight issues, although I don't think they always were. In fact, I'm sure they weren't always. But sometimes they got defined that way. And I think for some people it was an issue of whether or not you were a woman identified, and for other people it wasn't that kind of issue. And I think it had as much to do with people who were seen as being the movers and shakers, which isn't to say there weren't other people who had been movers but weren't being identified as such. But I think in some ways that was a little unhealthy and created some sense of divisions that weren't necessarily good for the program. Not necessarily real divisions or enduring divisions, but and certainly ones that I think melded away. People still talk about somehow there being a core group, when I think that who it is entirely changed, and I no longer think that there's any kind of a core group in the same sense, particularly because there is now a core faculty, and the core faculty are by and large not the same people who were the founders, and I think that shifted things an awful lot. Another kind of shift that I feel I tried to do, both as first outside director of women's studies, but also later in my role as the founding director of IRO, the Institute for Research on Women, was to get some focus on both research and graduate education. The program had been founded very much around undergraduate education, which I certainly think was appropriate at the time. It's not a critique. But I thought one of the things that we might do less in kind of service orientation and more for ourselves being at a research institution was to engage graduate students more and to spend more time discussing our own research, because it was very easy not to really know what each other did and studied. I'm not sure that I was particularly successful in my mere 3 years as director in doing that, other than to kind of now and again say we should work on that kind of thing. And I think the development with the work of Linda Nicholson on the Certificate for Women in Public Policy in the end has done the most for that. I know our graduate students and many other graduate students have been pulled into women's studies through that, and the visibility of those courses have pulled in graduate students into departmental courses, in my case in sociology, just because those cross-listings exist. And that's been, I think, very important. That's about as far as it's gone. We've been trying to get a master's for a long time, but for an assortment of reasons that are well beyond my term as director of women's studies, that's been slow coming. But it's made it, for me, all the more important that I founded the Institute for Research on Women as the way for us to try and pull together around our research. I'm not sure it's done as much as I would have liked, but it has certainly, I think, raised the stature of gender issues on campus by having a center around those issues, particularly in that we don't have a graduate program other than the certificate just yet. I think it helps heighten our image on campus, and I think we've done some pretty good conferences and brought in some useful money around those issues. Some of them, in fact, oriented towards curriculum, like actually two different four grants, one of which I was involved in on incorporating Puerto Rican women into the curriculum. That's a live conference on race, class, and gender in the curriculum, and the current one on internationalizing women's studies. I think have been good ways to sort of pull in both research and kind of undergraduate teaching together around women's studies. What's your next question?
Well, who are some of the memorable people that were involved that perhaps aren't involved now? Who came and went?
I guess maybe it's been too long. I always blame it on NutraSweet, so it's hard to remember. Although I gave up Diet Coke and Pepsi some time ago, it's hard to remember everybody who's come and went, come and gone. Although there's a kind of category of people that I particularly think of in that vein, and those are the people who we paid from the outside to teach part-time courses when we didn't have as many full-time or joint or split position regular, quote-unquote, regular faculty as we do now. Large numbers of women who taught terrific courses, not of all the names I'm going to come up with right now, but Jackie Kane and Gonzalez and Celia Gonzalez and other people who've taught racism, classism, and sexism. The woman who also did our internship, who's now retired,
Carol
Reichert, and her partner all taught.
Susan Russell. Right.
All taught a variety of courses on law, racism, classism, sexism. In fact, Carol Reichert developed our internship program. Certainly something I have pushed for and tried to develop placements, but she made it into a real program. And I think really people outside of the university developed racism, classism, and sexism as a key course, not to mention somebody I knew from Rensselaerville, Pat mentioned last time, I also don't remember right now, who taught a women in science course before we hired Bonnie and
Brown.
That doesn't sound quite right, but
she teaches at Siena now?
Could be, yeah.
She's married to somebody right on campus over in biology.
Yeah, probably the right person.
Yeah.
Anyway, there have been a number of people like that who I think have been key. We had people who taught women in film, who really helped branch out our curriculum when we didn't have faculty in those fields before the university hired anybody. Now there's both less money for part-timers, and we also have more people in diverse departments, either in joint positions with women's studies or who are what we call now core women's studies faculty, for whom all or part of their lines are in women's studies. I'm very happy to have the people we have, but it's true that I think there are a lot of people like that who I miss, who deserve a kind of a key place in what they did in developing women's studies. There are also, I think, were important community people who were part of the advisory committee for a long time. Dolores Schmidt, who I've been on many different committees with throughout the Capital District, was always very important. Was a former affirmative action officer on campus, but moved on to do that for the state and be active in now, and subsequently retired. But I think her connections with the community were important. And I'm sure I'm forgetting other people, but she's one of the people I remember. And I'm not sure how we would do that anymore, other than through our internship, which I think has been the major way to do that, especially when we have the internship receptions and we get to see the mentors as well as the mentees. But I feel that there's that kind of class of community people who have been somewhat lost, as well as the folks who had other jobs in the region who taught courses that have either become our mainstays or were important at the time, even though they either are courses we no longer teach or other people have picked them up, some of whose names we seem to have surfaced between us.
Right.
And I'm sure if I, you know, search through my lists, I could find many more like that. Those are the people I miss. Actually, I miss John Shoemaker, too. He was a good dean, and I was glad to see him move on to become a president of another campus, or to become a vice president and then a president of another campus. But he was certainly one of the supportive deans to me, and I do miss seeing him go on.
What about students? Are there some memorable students? It doesn't just have to be when you're a director, but...
There's a couple. One of whom actually was in the military, and that was how she paid her way to women's studies. She was one of the first of the faculty-initiated majors. She went on to become a lawyer and has actually subsequently been one of the contributors to women's studies funds and initiatives for women on campus. And she's one of the people I'm kind of proud of, who, you know, really went on and did some wonderful things. But there are also just some non-women's studies majors or students I remember. Actually, a male in my sociology of gender class who started off by being sure that his generation was different from mine, and as he described his life to me, and I pointed out the contradictions in what he said his values were and what was happening around him that he was upset by, I was able to point out to him that actually his world was not all that different from mine, and he needed to put together his ideology and his life. Really nice kid who was so appreciative of that kind of knowledge that he nominated me for the Sigmund Lattice Award from students for giving a contribution to teaching, and
that's so wonderful.
I was always so flattered by that, and that was one of the things you just do in the course of your teaching, but he sort of returned the favor, and it was a women's studies course joined with sociology, and he's certainly one I remember. I'm sure there are more. I think I probably keep up more with the graduate students who were women's studies interested but yet don't quite have a place to do it, but people who did sociology of gender and have gone off to have faculty jobs that I'm really proud of them on. some of whom I actually knew as an undergraduate or master, like Annie Rochelle,
yeah.
and a master's student who then went off to do criminal justice and decided it was too sexist for her and came back and actually became a gender specialist and got her PhD and got engaged in women's studies and is now off teaching sociology, and I believe it's acting.
Annie?
Yeah, Annie Rochelle, and she's acting director of women's studies.
Terrific.
On her campus at the University of San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Not San Francisco State, mm-hmm. University of San Francisco, which is a private school. And doing really well, mm-hmm. and still doing things one can be proud of, like getting money to teach an independent course on the sociology of the homeless. So those people I'm kind of proud of who started off, particularly I guess they've had a longer history, who started off in the beginnings and yeah. have really quite made something of their lives
mm-hmm.
that you can feel good about having had a small part in,
right.
Some larger, some smaller, but nonetheless mm-hmm. really, really proud of them. I wish actually we knew more about what became of our graduates.
Mm-hmm.
I know some have gone off and were in battered women's shelters and the like, and it would really be nice to know more of what they did than we do know.
Mm-hmm.
But they're definitely some to keep up with or run into and proud to see them. Some of them, even the small ones, I ran into somebody selling clothes in some clothing store in the mall who I didn't recognize, but who said, "Remember me? I was in your social gender class 10 years ago. And I want to tell you what an impression it made on me."
Mm.
And I think those are the things that always make you feel good, when you know you've had an impact on people's mm-hmm. lives. And even though the two women I ran into working there seemed to have somewhat traditional lives in many ways, they were doing part-time work and balancing part-time work with their children, and they were in traditional retail work, they clearly felt it had made them at least think about their choices more. Not mm-hmm. as dramatic as somebody becoming a lawyer and contributing to women's studies. But on the other hand, how many professors do you remember 10 years after your college education? Right. So I was pleased that there's been that kind of impact.
Well, that's an interesting question, you know. What are there any, what mm-hmm. is the impact, or what has been the impact? And how has it changed over the years? I mean, we're in a different time and climate now mm-hmm. than we were 20 years ago,
mm-hmm.
even 10 years ago.
Right. Well, I know the battles are different. I think the existence of women's studies is somewhat more taken for granted. Maybe majoring in it isn't as any more or less mm-hmm. taken for granted, but I think its existence is. But the fact that the major isn't may not be as helpful as it might. I mean, our numbers are certainly up,
mm-hmm.
but I mean in terms of cultural sense. But it's meant for lots of changes. That acceptance has meant that we've grown. One of the things I am proud that I was able to do that some people thought I wouldn't be able to do was to get the line to hire somebody to succeed me.
Mm, yeah.
Even though I had been promised, there was some doubt that it would happen. One of our women's studies colleagues saying, you know, who was actually working in the dean's office at the time, I didn't think it would work, and I persevered, and it did work, and we hired Iris Berger, who was director for 3 years, and she persevered, and we hired Bonnie Spanier. She persevered for much longer before we could hire anybody else,
right.
But then we were able to hire Vivian. So we've hired me, Iris, Bonnie, Vivian, you know, four people mm-hmm. from the outside, mm-hmm. plus Lillian Williams and Linda Pershing and Marjorie.
Mm-hmm.
I hope I'm not forgetting anybody else. And other people have transferred their
right,
lines,
right.
but there have been at least seven people. Oh,
mm-hmm.
and I am forgetting. and Ruth Dalva Acevedo,
right.
who's actually not really any longer on campus. But so we've hired at least eight people and had two or three other people, including Linda Nicholson and Francine Frank, transfer parts of their lines into women's studies. So we've become, in that sense, more stable. We've grown. It's given us a lot more control of our curriculum. We've had more control of our budget, whereas we always had some supplies and equipment money,
mm-hmm.
but when I was director, always got out of charity of our hearts any money towards hiring. Now we have some real money that's allocated. It may not be nearly what other departments get, but it is more than I got, and it gives you a kind of a control of your lives that we had much less of, and I think that's been a real strength. But in other ways, I'm not sure that students go into women's studies for any different kinds of reasons. There's certainly always people who do it for consciousness raising, but there are people who want to be still what I would call a feminist activist. They might not use those terms, but go into women's services in some way, to be lawyers for women, to run better women's shelters, to be editors of women's children's books. I mean, mm-hmm. all kinds of reasons, usually with joint majors, but we've encouraged that all along. And then there are people who do it because they see it as going well with whatever their majors are, anything from literature to sociology to anthropology, because it would help them in whatever they do, if they're going to do personnel management or survey research or nursing, teaching, whatever. They see either their clients or their co-workers as being women, and so it helps them to understand that. In that sense, I don't think it's changed too much. And the numbers haven't gone down in terms of the students. In fact, they've gone up. But I think the battles we fight are different. We now have to fight to retain what we've won. We have to fight to not be pushed back into program status, and those faculty that we've gained, certainly not fired, but dispersed into departments or combined into some larger ethnic and women's studies departments. None of that has happened, but we certainly have to, in these economic times, fight those battles in a way that doesn't help you move forward when you're doing so much rear guard action.
Right.
And figuring out how to get your FTEs up mm-hmm. so you're not cut and the like. I think it's sort of changed our orientation in those ways. But I don't think we're as far gone as the people who want to say there is no feminism or it's passé. I don't actually think that that's a problem in academics. The study of gender is still reasonably accepted. It might be that disciplines will claim that there's nothing left for women's studies to do because they each have one woman in their department to do gender things. But I think if it's cut, it will be kind of a part of fiscal retrenchment. Mm-hmm. I think that the department's been good at doing what we call service courses, diversity courses, courses required in the undergraduate distribution, ones that help make it a somewhat more key. It doesn't guarantee that there won't be some massive movement backwards, but I think that women's studies has been, in that sense, somewhat mainstreamed. I mean, we have done some of that work, which was always important to do. It was always a kind of part of a dual-pronged strategy to create a space to really have women's studies, but not to isolate women's studies from the rest of the disciplines. So that actually I see the core faculty now really talking about, well, what is core to women's studies, and what is our theory that isn't in other departments, and what is truly interdisciplinary, not multidisciplinary, kind of asking disciplinary questions in a sense, mm-hmm. field questions that we certainly always talked about, but weren't the focus mm-hmm. of what we were doing. Much more talking about how do we get a course in this, that,
right.
or the other thing.
Right.
And while that's certainly still of concern, the questions are different. They're really more traditional disciplinary questions. Not with traditional discipline answers, but questions that get answered. So I think that's a change. I think it also means that we've kind of evolved from having a Women's Studies Advisory Committee that had everybody on it to having first then a department where we had voting faculty and everybody else, to it's getting to be, it wasn't clear what everybody mm-hmm. else was doing, so that it was mostly the faculty. And now I'm starting to hear discussions that are really of the vein of, we are the core faculty, and the joint faculty, who are often the people who founded the program, are, I don't want to say second class citizens, but perhaps a scene is too tied to their own discipline and not going in the same trajectory, I sometimes feel. At least the discussion is that way. I don't think people are trying to dump us. But there sometimes is a sense that the joint faculty were in some sense the only faculty in the beginning are now, I hate to use the word secondary, but secondary. It's also true that joint faculty are always torn between their prime departments and any interdisciplinary department and core faculty don't have to be. And so in that sense, there's a real structural difference that's true. But it represents a kind of culling all along that, well, like since I came in 1978, and this is now 1997, almost a 20-year kind of culling process, a scary thought. I should also say, I think when I came, I thought I was going to be director for 3 years and go back to Seattle. And I've now been here 19 years, and here I am. But I did discover that some of the things I disliked about the University of Washington were not about academics, but about some of the structures that I met there, and that I liked the structures here better. Mm-hmm. So I think that was part of the change for me as well. It made a difference to be a more welcoming place. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Okay, well, in the intermission, Judy, you were saying that all the directors you've talked to and chairs in women's studies have had a sense of what it is they want to do, and I think that that's very much part of being a director or a chair, is having a vision of where you think things should go. I don't think, you probably can't be a very good director if you don't have a vision, otherwise you're just a placeholder, yeah. Exactly. And as I was saying earlier, I think some of what I ended up doing, since so much of it had to do with networking and linking women's studies to other departments, was basically the kind of housework of administration, of doing the things that keep you busy all the time, having lunches, calling people, following up, meeting new people, that do produce things, but not so quickly, that you're always busy, but it's not quite clear what you're doing. Although I do think that in the long run they have a product, and just as when housework is not done you can tell, I think when that kind of administrative work isn't done you can tell. And people have to have a vision, and those visions have to shift, because hopefully each director meets that vision or comes close to it, and the next one comes in trying to fill another gap. And I think that's one of the reasons that rotation of director and chair is very important, and one of the reasons that I know I argued that it was time for Bonnie, after whatever 9 years of being a director and then chair, to get a break, partly because everybody deserves a break.
Right.
But partly just because sometimes difference of vision is good. Not that there's anything wrong with anybody's particular vision, but that I think that the building of different visions of what program and department can be, as long as they're not done as a caretaker but really actively worked on in some feminist fashion, can build things. And I know I've always felt that it was important to bring women of different feminist persuasions to the program, that different programs start with different ethoses, and some start from a socialist feminist base, the concern for class, others from a radical feminist base, and yet others again from a liberal feminist base, and I think ours started primarily from a radical feminist base with bits and pieces of socialist feminism, but I've always felt that it was important to bring in everybody who's at least a feminist, maybe not everybody who talks about gender, because there have been some pretty reactionary works on gender, but from all the branches of feminism, because students should see all the branches. They should know there isn't just one version of feminism. It helps them pick and choose which is theirs without being turned off by the one they happen to admit if it isn't theirs. And to see the variety of thought that's possible, because in fact feminism is always changing, certainly since I was director. Postmodernism has had a large impact on women's studies and really all of the disciplines. And one couldn't have, I don't think we necessarily have a postmodern women's studies program, but we do have several people who who do that, as well as socialist feminists and liberal feminists, and I think we've become more diverse in that way, and I think that's very important as part of the vision. And by rotating chairs, you can allow all those different visions and where they lead, hopefully with each one building and strengthening what went before rather than tearing down the prior.
Right.
I don't think we've ever had anybody tear down the prior, and where things have gone by the wayside, I think it's been more because the time was up for that idea than because the idea wasn't nurtured. Right. But I do think those visions are really important. I think we each had different ones, and I, in that sense, having Vivian as chair now, Vivian Eng, concretizes what's always been a verbal commitment of the program to incorporate race and ethnicity as well as gender and class. And while we've always talked about that, it took a while before we first got our first woman of color on the core faculty, and it's taken till 1996 to have the first director, chair, excuse me, also from the outside, who is a woman of color. I guess I don't really think until women of color have significant voices in women's studies, as we're starting to, will we do the things that we say we want to do. But it's yet another step that we weren't able to do in the beginning because there's too much separation of women of color feminists from white feminists, and that had to be brought together before we all worked in the same program. So I feel like it's a positive evolution.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, it's healthy. Yeah, oh yes, I'm very pleased.